once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host this week, Gwen Sheldamer, our sound editor, Chris Cameron, and our guest, Tom Gannon Hamilton. Each week, we visit with a local or regional author or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask our guests to introduce us to their work and to read for us. We like to get a glimpse into their lives, find out what inspires them, what prompts them to write. And we're delighted to have Tom Gannon Hamilton visiting Cobourg from Toronto with us today. Tom Gannon Hamilton's lifelong engagement with poetry dates almost from his birth on April the 10th, 1957, in Fernie, British Columbia. He composed his first poem at age 9 and was first published in Blue Buffalo Dandelion Press in 1981. He was awarded first prize in the 2018 Big Pond Rumors Chapbook Competition for a suite of poems entitled El Merio, which chronicles the poet's experiences in war-torn El Salvador during the 1980s. Tom's books Panoptic, Aeolus House Press, and El Merio, Big Pond Rumors were launched on recent Canada-wide reading tours. So, how did a career musician, poet, and visual artist like you come to be involved in arts community development?
I think my first experience with a community that was really dynamic, that was in Detroit in the early 1970s. My family moved there, and of course I moved there with them. And I began my professional career as a musician across the river from Windsor in Detroit. And it was a wonderful awakening. First of all, Motown Industries was still in Detroit. Mm-hmm. I would go over there to play in the Detroit International Youth Symphony Orchestra. But what was really amazing was that the whole atmosphere in those days was supercharged. Motown, or Motor City, was a musical phenomenon that had also created a social economy. So I was immediately interested. I was curious as to how it was that this could have been constructed, especially when at the time I was reading Malcolm X's autobiography. And I could see that the development of separate institutions for African Americans and for the white majority in the States, which is, you know, it's about 14% at the time anyway, African American, but very heavily concentrated, 90% of Detroit. So to have a social economy that was being generated from essentially an arts cultural movement, that to me was fascinating. So the beginning to shape that idea that the entire economy and also our entire well-being can come out of an arts initiative. It was very exciting. It was also, I have to say, at a time when I really needed to have a greater perspective because my world was getting bigger. And I had to grow into that world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this was I was born in Fernie. So I'd lived in Fernie, Vernon, in the Okanagan, Vancouver, Seattle, Edmonton, and Windsor. So at that point, yeah, I better have a perspective.
Tell us a little about your career as a musician. Use the term authentic voice. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's tied. The two are tied. I've always been interested in the bringing into being something that previously had not existed. This had a very powerful effect on me, but it also the people around me. We're talking about the entire social ferment that could be created by, for example, Marvin Gaye's album, The Ecology, you know, what's going on. Groundbreaking. So it's like a kind of an epiphany. How is it personal? It's very personal in the sense that my writing, for one thing, reflects an entirely different set of dynamics.
Identity politics. They seem to be influencing literature and the arts in general more and more in Canada now.
It's like any other situation where people say, well, if you want to know what's going on, just follow the money. When you think for many, many years, artists in Canada have looked towards getting funding from provincial and federal government sources. Our provincial and federal government have, rightly so, a mandate, and that mandate has to do with diversity, with social diversity. So recognizing voices that had previously not been so in evidence, right, and therefore, you know, writing a kind of an injustice of history, is part of what's taking place. The effect that that has, though, is that it diverts attention away from the creative act, the aesthetics, the stylistics, all of the formal aspects of art that used to be its focus. These are missed, and what we see instead is that the primacy of one's identity then is how one manages to make one's way as an artist, and it is utter nonsense, because when we look at any success that we've had in the arts in Canada, it has been a result of our spawning grounds, where there was a tremendous ferment of art taking place, people in different media interacting with one another. You had all of these different aspects that were building the culture. As a result, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, we had this growth of a culture that went international. Not True. Because of some sort of plan, but because we had spawning grounds. Now, how does that relate then to the current phase? Well, the current phase is, well, one where essentially we don't recognize so much the processes by which art is made, the development of art, where it comes from, how it spawned, how we curate it, how we bring it to market. We don't look at any of these at all. We tend to look more at how the art that we're publishing or the art that we're funding is reflecting our social diversity, our various identities or select identities.
We could go on talking about this for a very long time.
Because, you're going to have to edit that.
There are certain things that happen because of that.
Yes.
That. Mm-hmm. But we don't, unfortunately, have time.
That's right.
So I'm going to pass on to your chapbook, Il Mario.
Yes.
So it won the chapbook prize for 2018 and chronicles your experience in war-torn El Salvador. The suite of poems is dedicated to your beloved wife on the 30th anniversary of her death. Please tell us a little about that terrible time and how it influenced your current work.
Okay, so sort of both sides of the Dickensian question, because it was the best and the worst of times. Because when people are mobilized, their virtues are mobilized as well.
Yeah.
So I have to say that it was an opportunity as well to meet some extraordinary people and to be engaged in activities that were themselves very, very momentous.
Yes.
This poem goes back to a time when a delegation of ours was delivering medical aid and where we were also taking records for the Interchurch Committee on Human Rights, for Amnesty International, and in general to be an international witness. The poem is called Delicate Miseries. Dysentery, nausea, heat prostration are among the constitutional revolts. Mine is high fever, typical for me, an excuse to rave. Delirium fulfills my inner craving to be under a cool hand, semi-articulate, above my companions' audibly horrid expulsions. One delegate, driven mad, then to the airport, mentions only those pitch-colored masks worn by guards outside refugee camp gates. Perhaps it is really inside that compound, or further within a strafed clinic where haggard medics lose patients to regular attacks. It may be the inmate held at Calle Real, seized on suspicion, the sole charge, electricity surging through her flooded cell. The spa, sporadic partial asphyxiation under the hood, revived by flogging to confess only a burnt, punctured prayer for deliverance. 5 years internment in which to summon words for the late, almost never witness, microphone up sleeve, tape recorder down pants, the tranquil inquisitor, whose privilege it is to escape lucidity into bodily asylum, pampered with the choice of delicate miseries.
Would you read Partners?
This was written about 4 years after the loss of my dear love, Rina Haimovich. Partners. I am still your partner in this dance, as each day is a lovely, deadly partner to the next, as certain as your body or the shadow of your body is cast in the afterglow of ecstasy, desire or the memory of desire will remain in your aftermath. Tango or macabre, I cannot say which is the greater agony. But when the night returns without you, in love and in the grave, I am still your partner in this dance. I cannot say if the greater loss is in forgetting, being neither able nor willing to forget. But while I am still your partner, recalling no fear in your eyes, I will dance in shadow and whisper to the soft light, gracias por la baila, gracias a la vida.
Thank you. That's a very beautiful poem.
Thank you very much.
Now we'll take a short break.